Hi, and welcome to the Indexical Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Massaro Flora, and this episode we feature artist Anne Altstadt. Altstadt is an interdisciplinary artist whose work explores temporality, the intersections of scientific inquiry and mysticism, and the hidden stories of the material world. Their research interests include paleontology, cosmology, discard studies, human relationships with the non-human, and multi-species survival in the face of global climate chaos. They graduated from the Digital Arts and New Media MFA program at the University of California, Santa Cruz in 2018, and as a founding collective member of the Fabrica Textile Workshop, their arts practice remains informed by community engagement, collaborative processes, and material reuse. They have been recognized by the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County as a 2020-2021 Riedel Visual Arts Fellow. Anne lives on the historic floodplain of the San Lorenzo River with their partner and kiddo, a cat, two dogs, five chickens, and innumerable termites. This interview took place in front of a public audience at the closing reception of their exhibition, Why Is There Something Instead of Nothing? Hi, everyone.
Hi.
So today we're lucky to have artist Anne Altstadt with us. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your history as an artist and your practice and how it's changed over the years and how it came to where it is now.
Okay. Well, just yet again, thanks everybody for being here. It is fun and an honor. So for a long time, I think I primarily identified as a printmaker, and a maker of flat art and images. And I always was interested in how I couldn't think outside of a single image, but somehow together, maybe a sequence of images was forming a larger narrative, but ended up feeling kind of stuck in like a sequence of rectangles. And I also, as a, you know, an undergraduate, had studied earth science and geology, and was pretty consistently interested in collaboration and collaborating with people researching in different fields, and just kind of morphed into doing work that was more responsive to a particular set of ideas in particular places rather than any set medium, I'd say. So, yeah, I don't know. At this point, it makes stuff that is usually assembled out of garbage.
Yeah, think I picked up on that. I think that's one of the first things I noticed about Anne's practice is sort of the materiality of their work. And, one thing that over, the course of time I've been sort of living in this exhibition, one of the things that I thought is really interesting is that there seems to be no hierarchy between natural and synthetic objects. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you could talk on that.
Yeah. So, I'm pretty interested in matter and chemistry and the rearrangement of material over time. Acknowledging like the way that humans have developed our technologies, our practices of rearranging material, that's come up with some pretty toxic, poisonous, devastating results, but nothing new is created, nothing other than heat is lost. And so it's all natural.
Thermodynamics, right?
Yeah. You think about material, can be tracked through these different sorts of reorderings and transformations, and the categories of natural and unnatural are kind of secondary. I love the tension between like a dread of the toxic hellscape that we're creating, and also sort of reveling in, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's like almost like an excitement, like horror of, but like a beautiful horror of like the weird recombinations that we're bringing into being.
It definitely feels like a result of, you know, the stage we're living in, this like stage of late capitalism with this like highly globalized society and all this sort of like cast off waste and junk, which I guess makes me wonder, like, how do you source some of this stuff?
I'm looking at Josh. I was like, many of these things I found in my yard. No, but the cosmological model / quasar / unknown, unobservable object that's taking
that's
up space.
That's this one up here
at the top of the room. Its body was a buoy, was marine garbage that. I think Greta, were you involved in finding it? My kid, I think, was involved in finding it on the beach. Yes. And then it hung around in our yard, and then it was a dragon egg for a scavenger hunt that contained a special scroll that had footprints of our, like, dogs and cat for celebrating your birthday. And then it, like, sat around in our yard for a while longer. And then I was looking for a spherical object and contemplating, like, you know, making something in sections on the router at school and, you know, laminating and gluing it together. And I was like, wait a second, I have a very, like, vaguely spherical object that already has a hole through it. So just as an example, I pick things up. I love going to the landfill. Sometimes I'm intentionally looking for particular materials, but other times I'm just noticing things.
Yeah.
Like these particular branches, I'd been keeping an eye on the trees next to the railroad tracks by Depot Park. They shed branches, and they're really good looking branches. And luckily I was able to snag them before they had been cleaned up by the city, but yeah.
So your work tends to use a lot of found objects. I'm wondering, you know, do you feel a synergy with sort of like Duchamp or like the found art movement or like Dada?
Yeah, definitely. I think I love, making the ordinary strange, because the ordinary is very strange. Like just the, just the very existence of like matter that's dense enough so that I can't put my hand through it, you know, like that there's, that it's like, why is there something rather than nothing? It's like, we exist in a universe where stuff has coalesced and it's like progressed along a certain pattern that ends up with this like really specific result of this planet that we live on, where there is, wind that blows leaves, and there's rock and roll, and there's like nuclear bombs, and there's, you know, there's all the stuff, and it didn't have to be, none of that had to be exactly the way that it is. So in, like, I think back to, sort of, I don't know, surrealist or Dada tendencies of making the mundane weird. I think that makes visible some of, the peculiarities of things we take for granted.
It's funny because I definitely have this sort of general feeling of, you know, these objects that comprise this exhibition are sort of the everyday, like sort of mundane, but there's also sort of this vitality to them. And I noticed that even when people speak of some of the sculptures, they don't identify the objects, like, for example, a buoy or sticks, There seems to be this sort of like material interplay of the objects and sort of what I think, you know, we've talked about a lot in our discussions is sort of like this thing power, or what Jane Bennett refers to, this like vitality of materials, or like an ability for objects to speak. And I know that's like a big influence, or at least something you've talked about in the past.
Totally.
So yeah, I'm wondering how you see, yeah, maybe like how these things come together and how that kind of thinking might play in your process.
I think it usually involves sitting with things and kind of, I'm interested in their relationship with each other or how they can stand in for other things. Kind of like a lot of the apparatuses in the windows are, it's like viewing apparatuses of different kinds. It's just kind of part of a longer trajectory of me playing an alien scientist. But they're not actually necessarily useful for gathering factual information, but it's sort of like a performance of viewing. But in terms of combining different materials, I think a lot of times I'll have a flash, but of how I want to put something together. But a lot of it has to do with practicing seeing things for their sort of their shape and their character and their weight and their some sort of being that is not the category that they're in or the name that they have, you know? So yeah, it's like, I think it is trying to think about the world that we live in as full of active participants.
Yeah. I think like when I think of you as not just an artist, but as a person, I often think of like this sort of like solidarity or with both like human and non-human actors. Like you're mm-hmm. involved very much in the community through Fabrica. I know you used to work at Bike Church where mm-hmm. you were maybe at that time a volunteer mechanic.
Mm-hmm. We paid ourselves for some of the behind the scenes time, but during the public facing time was all volunteer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you're very heavily involved at the Hub still to this day. I don't know, is that something that you see in yourself, or does it just feel like very natural to you, or like?
I think that those both, well, okay. So both the Fabrica and the Bike Church have to do, there's many different ways that you can view the projects, but there's like in the center of both of them, there is really sort of a respect for the material and just the skills and the tools and the hands and learning in community, and like identifying, taking things that might be trash and figuring out a way that they can be useful and be beautiful and be celebrated, you know, sort of celebrating the act of repair and the knowledge that enables that. And the relationships that are formed like in that interaction, you know, so you can, it creates a space where, people can connect over a shared goal or learning together outside of a monetary exchange necessarily. I like the belonging too, you know, but also the junk belongs too. It's like, I don't know. It's like people connection, but also, but I like going to the landfill too. Sometimes I want to work for the sanitation department. It's gross, but I love it.
I think for a while there was this program where you could work.
I participated. Yeah. Okay. Well, I did an artist residency there. Yeah. It was great. I loved it. Yeah.
Can you reapply?
It doesn't exist currently.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Bummer. I wish I could reapply.
They're really missing out.
They are missing out.
Yeah. I guess the reason I bring that up is I think that the way you interact with people and things and stuff, it's like kind of like what somebody, like a kind of person that might, you know, need assistance or something, whereas like they might be like sort of an outcast of society, like, or like an object that is deemed waste for you. It seems like you're able to like see it through this like lens of like possibility. And there's something about the way I think you're able to see the world that it like where things kind of come together in a very like poetic or beautiful way. That wasn't a question.
I like that idea. I like that idea.
Yeah, and I guess kind of going along with that, there seems to always be this like hope or like this solidarity with in like troubling times, you know, we're like in this period that's, you know, a lot of people call it the Anthropocene, where there's, you know, huge, you know, extreme wealth inequality, there's like corporate control of the economy. There's just seemingly like endless surplus of waste and trash being produced. And I know you definitely have your own opinions and views at that, but you're seemingly somehow to like sit with it and not let it bum you out or... At least in my...
I spend a fair amount of time pretty bummed out. But
maybe it helps when you can take that stuff.
I was going to say, but therapy and medication help.
Yeah.
But no, I think that there's some amount of like finding beauty and humor and like having that on balance with like feeling the feelings of feeling bummed out. Yeah, I don't know. If I'm doing well, I find things beautiful. And even the, like, I like the word I was grasping for, there's kind of, like, even in things that are horrific, there can still be, like, kind of a charge or a, it's kind of a sublime feeling. And there's things that are horrific that are just awful, but being in the presence of like certain weird combinations of human action in the world, I find things interesting and I find things can be scary and beautiful at the same time. And like, and also funny. And it's kind of like, the like thick tangle of all that like feels really important.
Yeah, I always feel like the absurdity, it's important to always like take a step back and just, you know, appreciate the absurdity of life. Otherwise, I think you really can drive yourself mad.
Yes.
You know, and so sometimes, sometimes it's like as simple as like laughing at myself or this thing I was like obsessing over or, you know, even... Yeah, I think it's healthy.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I don't know what the future's going to hold and it's just going to keep getting weirder. But I do know that like community and like loving each other and trying to be of help and use and take care of each other. And like find stuff that's useful and find stuff that's beautiful and fix stuff. Like these are all going to be critical to like
critical tools for the future.
For survival and, you know, on multiple levels. And, so yeah, just trying to do that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's now or never.
It's both.
Also, the other thing that comes to mind is sort of this inherent, I guess, sort of feeling of surveillance. Mm-hmm. You have these closed circuit televisions. Mm-hmm. And I keep trying to during my time like sitting with this piece, I kept wondering how that plays into it. I definitely, it makes me feel certain things. I'm certainly affected by it, but I wasn't able to sort of come to like some sort of like conceptual meaning or conclusion in my mind. Not that it needs to, but I know we talked a little earlier about surveillance, and maybe you could share that
with
the public.
So the surveillance cameras are part of my viewing apparatus. And I do know that it's also loaded, and it's sort of like antiquated, it's surplus, it's analog video stuff that you can plug in and split and recombine in sort of this tactile way. And that's fun, and I enjoy doing that. It's a tool that I enjoy using. And also, like, when I was thinking about this space and thinking about the up high kind of inaccessible nature of the space and the, you know, placement of the windows and what you can see in and what you are seeing, and, you know, it's like everything that's happening, the space is down here. Like, what if there was something up there that you couldn't see except through this sort of mediated interface? And I started, you know, kind of attaching that to other things that we can like gain knowledge of but can't see directly, whether that's like large scale cosmological stuff, whether that's small scale sort of like, you know, particles and quantum interactions and stuff. That in all of those cases, that there's these viewing technologies that are indirect, and where you are, you know, maybe in the presence of something, but not able to directly experience it or directly see it. But you can see its interactions with other things, see the effect that it has on other things, maybe. So there's sort of this, like, there's like a paranoia about, you know, and ideas of surveillance and police state and things like that. But that's not really my main goal. My main goal is is it's a viewing apparatus for this thing that's there that you can't see except through sort of indirect means, and kind of thinking about playing with like that indeterminacy of scale and what's there that maybe is like, you know, if it's dark matter, is it structuring the way that like matter was able to, the matter we're made out of was able to like, you know, condense in the early universe? Is it some sort of, I've been calling it a quasar, but, you know, is it some sort of large structure, or is it some sort of small structure? And it's like the space that we're in, I've been thinking of as sort of as a kind of like splitting open a moment, because we've got like our two halves of the same moment that we're in between. And maybe that's like a pocket dimension where you can access whatever this kind of other constant structure is.
So I'm going to describe this piece for like for people who can't see it. And, you know, the idea is that we're recording this. And so if you're not able to make it to this exhibition, basically there's this floating sculpture above the space, and then there's a number of surveillance cameras that are broadcasting this indoor sculpture into these monitors that are very public facing and that face the street. And so unless you've been in the space, you may not know that what you're seeing on these monitors is an actual physical real-time sculpture inside Indexical's exhibition / gallery space. So I think that there's probably been a number of people that live in the neighborhood and pass by Indexical every day and see these videos, and they probably just think it's a loop. They probably just think it's maybe a recording. What they don't realize is that they're seeing directly into the space.
I was interested in that being like, because, you know, a lot of times since programming in here is is at, you know, at night and light controlled and things like that. If the shutters are down, you don't know that the windows are even looking into this space. And just the building is amazing. And there's like, I feel like as much space up there as there is down here. And it's got this really great wood grain. The plywood on the walls has really got a loud voice, and that kind of, you know, it's, that's created from, you know, peeling away layers of a tree and unfolding. So it's kind of like a flattening, it's an interesting spatial thing, because also it like does a, like to make plywood, they do like a spiral cut of a tree and then unpeel it. And so it repeats itself too, as you're like seeing, you know, as it like comes around again in the spiral, like if you unfold that, that's like the same pattern of the tree repeating. So I don't know. It's kind of, it's like this space that's, and it's like an old building that has cool big beams, yeah, and all this history. Other history. And I was interested in some way making this sort of secret space a public space, you know, as well as the idea of being like, what's in there? How do I see it? What, you know?
I think it actually like functions in two ways, in that one, if you're an external observer on the street level and you see these monitors, you may not realize what exactly is being projected on the monitors. But two, if you're in here, you might come look around, you might not look up and see the sculpture, you might not, unless you're inquisitive or somebody tells you, you might not see the monitors in the windows. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to be rewarded for the inquisitive.
Do we want to open up for questions?
How yeah. Does anybody have questions from the audience?
Yeah.
When we're talking about the from it being like a dragon egg to also like the installation itself, or like the installation being a question, and then that sort of turning everything inside into like responses to a question. I was thinking about like language and how like changing the name of something like changes the material or our relationship to it, but also the work itself, like kind of to me saying that like these objects exist and have their own languages outside of like our human verbal language. So I was hoping to invite you to talk more about your relationship to language and like how it plays into your work.
Yeah, I do like words. but I also are like human urges towards ordering and naming everything get in the way. They can be both like, it's very seductive and it's very fun. And like, you know, I studied, in my science studies, it's like, I was really good at memorizing like all the names and dates and like lists of things. And I get a real thrill out of like having the answer and knowing the word for that. But it also is, it's stuff that we like superimpose onto a fully complicated system that we're part of, but that doesn't have any words, you know? It's like, yeah, and I love puns, and I love one thing standing in for another thing. And I love kind of, yeah, that there's a buoy that was a dragon egg, and then there's like some sticks from the dog walk, and then, you know, that they're stuck together and it becomes a quasar. Like, I love kind of the ability to play with names and words. Yeah.
let's do one more. Ben?
I guess I was hoping to ask you about your feelings around periphery and how maybe that relates to architecture / surveillance, but also kind of this specifically around like you know, the micro macros routes that we do with, like, in daily life, whether we're walking down the street, whether we're considering an object, whether we're, you know, listening to music, the way that time can, like, fold and expand during certain moments. And I know you and I, like, share a lot of, you know, interesting, like, observing light and shadows and how, like, I guess I've been thinking a lot about, like, periphery and how we interpret that information and how it, like, points us in certain directions in certain ways. I wonder how that, maybe the, how the space informed that, and maybe how in general you observe your actions in tandem with the things that are in focus.
I hadn't thought about that word. Very much, except that when a recent experience going out to view the comet, like, that was around a little, like, couple weeks ago, and, like, going out to the field by Longmarine Lab and, like, waiting and waiting and waiting, and finally we spotted it, but it was this thing where I could, it's like you can see it really clearly through binoculars, like through a mediated device assisting my senses, but then otherwise, I couldn't see it. I could, like, be looking where it was, and I couldn't see it. But then if I looked, like, 10 degrees off to the side, I could see it very clearly, you know? And it was, like, this big streak across the sky, but viewed, not directly viewed, like, from sort of kind of the side of my vision. And that's just how our eyeballs work. But I do think a lot about... it's like a weird, it's like periphery is not a word I think about a lot, but I do, you know, it's interesting to see, like, what is the edges, where is something becoming something else, and kind of like what's there together. Like, what I think about the trash stratum a lot. I think about, like, what's in the gutter, and, like, what, you know, as something is, like, lowered from importance and rising from abjectness, and kind of how they can,
the detritus,
yeah, how they can blend, you know, and it's unclear where one starts or when the other begin, you know, stops and begins, or kind of like what categories things held previous to that. But I love like phenomenon of light, right? And all vision is phenomena of light, and it's like through the way that light interacts with all the surfaces around you. That's like how you are seeing your friends and how you're perceiving color and how, you know how to not hit your head on something, and, you know, but it's all like a remote sensing thing. It's like, you're not physically touching any of the things you see, but you can know these like intimate microscopic details of them by like the way that light interacts with them. And, so I think of that as like a pretty interesting, I don't know, yeah, like ability that we've somehow, I don't know. I mean, folks have been doing that for a long time since they had just like little eye spots, you know, it's like, but we've got cool eyes. Yeah. I think about compound eyes a lot too. Like, what would it be like to have compound eyes?
Did we want to do one more? Or like, does anyone have any? Otherwise... Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Which is that since I came to the opening of this show, I realized I left realizing that reminded me of something, but I couldn't remember or think of what until today. And it looks so much like the diagrams that I had memorized about the our brain neuron.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot like a neuron.
I really have just been appreciating this sort of cosmological origin and then thinking about our brain neurons and thinking about electricity and thinking about light. And this has just been so generative. Mm. Thank you.
Yay. Yeah, I was liking that. I wanted a branching form, and I was like, well, branches are a branching form, but then it's like, you know, it's like there's branching forms that are big and there's branching forms that are small. And like, I'm like, oh, like, you know, I like the idea of growth and finding one's way. Yeah, big and small.
Okay, well, bye. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you so much, Michael. Yay!
And
thanks,
everybody. And we have some great music by Kite Hands Glowing.
Rock and roll.
Yeah.